Welcome to RCGP Scotland Presents Generally Speaking. In this, the fourth episode of the podcast, RCGP Scotland Chair Dr. Chris Provan discusses health inequalities with Dr. Carrie Linen, Chair of the Scottish Deep End Project.
Hello, Carrie. Good to see you. Welcome to Generally Speaking, the Royal College in Scotland's podcast, our very own podcast, and real privilege to have you here and use of your massive experience and knowledge around health inequalities, which is what we're talking about today. So thank you. So Carrie, tell us a bit about yourself and how you became involved in health inequalities, perhaps.
Thank you, Chris, and thank you for inviting me onto your podcast. It's great to be with you today, chatting about this stuff, which is a personal and professional passion of mine. So thank you for inviting me on. A bit about myself. So I am a GP, obviously. I qualified as a GP in 2003. In terms of what kind of made me interested in health inequalities, it's quite difficult to pinpoint at what point that happened, but I guess there are various points along my life course that I became interested in social justice and fairness, which probably started quite early on in childhood, just my parents kind of being very making it very clear to us as children that there are people that are less well off than us, and that fairness is really valued within the family, which I think then just kind of infuses into your state of being as you go out into the world as an older person. I studied medicine in Aberdeen, and I don't remember at that time there being a huge emphasis on inclusion health within the curriculum, but I do remember being interested in the ethics bits, the public health bits, the social medicine bits, and doing a project during one of my summer holidays with Aberdeen Drug Action, where I attended a drop-in for 8 weeks and learnt about what some of the barriers were to using barrier contraception in reducing HIV, which of course was still a big issue at that time. So my eyes were opened, I think, a lot during that project to things that I just didn't have an awful lot of awareness of. And then during training, when I finished training, I wanted to do more around medical ethics, and I did one of the higher professional training fellowships and had a placement in Craig Miller Medical Practice, which is a practice serving a pretty deprived, socioeconomically deprived part of Edinburgh. And this, I think, was a real learning curve for me. I realised that I had to learn quite different skills, quite different approaches. I was really inspired by the colleagues that I was working with who were really kind of united by a sense of purpose in working with a population that, you know, was extremely resilient given all the challenges that were constantly thrown at it. But just huge social issues that kind of infused through every consultation. So I felt like I was kind of having to relearn the rule book after having just set my MRCGP. And then I went back to that practice many years later as a partner, which was a great privilege to work there. And in the intervening years, worked for 5 years in the homeless service in Edinburgh again, which was a massive learning curve for me. And I think in many ways I learned more about inclusion health and health inequalities, what drives them, how we understand them, how we can best address them as clinicians from colleagues and from patients, probably more than any formal teaching that I had at medical school or in GP training. And a constant reminder just about every day when I was seeing patients in the consulting room, particularly in homelessness, that, you know, really so much of what happens to us in our life is a combination of bad luck and difficult circumstance, and there but for the grace of God go any of us. So it was a real kind of constant reminder of you know, that we have to think of inclusion health and health inequalities as kind of core NHS business, really impacting on any one of us at any time. And I think once I'd worked in those settings, it would be difficult to work in different settings. So it's been kind of various points, I guess, across the journey. And I learned, I think particularly in homelessness, that healthcare systems are often designed by healthy people for use by healthy people. And we have this assumption that if we roll services out, that everybody can make equal use of them. But of course, they can't. Because it requires the ability to trust people, to form relationships, to have your voice heard, to navigate complex systems, to have choice, and none of those things are a given. And I think, you know, these are all things that I feel I learned once I'd started working and learning from really kind of inspiring colleagues and patients.
I work in a practice which is not exactly deep end, because deep end are the 100 most deprived practices in Scotland, as I understand. But I have daily experience in the day job of helping patients with social problems, substance misuse, exactly what you're talking about there, and disempowered patients. I actually find it very, very satisfying professionally, and but it is an intense part of the job. So, Carrie, can you tell me about the work of the deep end and really just in general the highlights of the impact of health inequalities on health?
I mean, I guess the deep end as a concept, as a project, was set up in 2009, and it was part funded at the time by the college in Scotland and by Scottish Government. And it was the first time really that clinicians, that GPs working in the most deprived practices in Scotland had time to come together to share their experience and to establish a network of peer support, to get the sense of kind of shared identity and purpose and sort of a recognition of common challenges faced. I think there just hadn't been that opportunity before. So it was a really important first meeting in 2009 when that first happened. And I think, you know, some of the challenges that you've described there, Chris, are very familiar with all clinicians really working in Scotland, because all of us care for patients who are experiencing poverty to a greater or lesser extent, depending on the demographics of the practice that we're working within. But I think that the challenges of working in areas of more blanket deprivation, where the vast majority of patients are experiencing poverty, were quite stark, and it was an opportunity for clinicians to share what that was or what that felt like. So higher levels of early multi-morbidity, people living shorter lives in sicker health, often shorter consultations and higher consultation rates, smaller workforces, higher levels of burnout, but also this, as you say, enormous sense of reward for working with people with very significant unmet need, and feeling that there are multiple ways in which we can make a difference to people's lives that is not just traditional medicine approaches. It's often thinking about the much more holistic elements of what we mean by care. Some of that being just building trust over time. Some of that being an awareness of how to link in with the colleagues in our team that offer more of the sort of social conduits of support, like community link workers or financial inclusion workers. And I guess over the years, although the deep end started off as this kind of defined membership of 100 practices in the most deprived parts of Scotland, which was about 10% of practices at the time, over the last few years, we've been really keen to kind of extend that out a little bit, really, in recognition of the fact that all practices have patients experiencing deep end issues on their list, that there's a huge amount of learning and support that can be offered more widely to anyone who's interested in inclusion health. And so the deep end steering group, which meets four times a year, doesn't just have deep end GPs on it anymore. We have non-deep end GPs, if we want to use that definition. But of course, I think inclusion health GPs is probably a better definition. We've got community link workers. We've got a psychologist. We've got emergency medicine doctors who are interested in inclusion health. And we're keen to keep growing that sense of kind of alliedship around what is it that we can all do to work together and learn from each other to make sure that general practice is enabled to play the very key role that it can play in addressing and mitigating health inequalities. Some of the learning, I guess, from the deep end has been that if you provide a little bit of funding for some headspace for leadership and to allow people to come together and meet, that very great things can happen. The yep. work of the deep end has always been led from the front line, but it's centrally coordinated with an ongoing a little bit of funding to allow that. And we've got kind of four main principles that we work under, which are the WEAR principles, W-E-A-R. The W is looking at what does a workforce look like in general practice that effectively addresses health inequalities. So some of that is about growing and supporting and enabling and training the GP workforce. And the report that the college released last year on the Scottish GP workforce and socioeconomic health inequalities was really powerful in just articulating what that means. But the other parts of the workforce, of course, that we've been interested in are community link workers, financial inclusion workers, embedded mental health workers, embedded alcohol nurses, and other parts of the team that really feel important in what we mean by a modern, inclusive general practice team. Then the EBIT is education and engagement. We do lots of work. Many of us are involved in education, either at an undergraduate or postgraduate level, and often, you know, presenting at conferences or as part of panels, and just really raising awareness of what some of the issues are that we all face as clinicians on a daily basis in trying to support our patients. A is for advocacy. There's a lot of advocacy work goes on within the deep end in terms of raising awareness or concerns about the impact that, for example, the cost of living crisis is having on our patients, and thinking about practical things that could be done to support. But it's also advocacy around the role of the profession and why the profession needs supported and enabled to do things in the best way that it can. And then R is for research. There's a lot of really great academics on the deep end group as well, who help to inform where does the evidence come from? What does good look like? What's the impact of, for example, longer consultations or using different models of care? What's been the impact of things like the new GP contract on health inequalities? So we've also got lots of researchers doing work on that too. And then in more recent years, we've become more involved in influencing policy development, in trying to collaborate as much as we can with all our kind of key allies out in the system, like the college, like the BMA, like NES, all the organisations that have different levers within the system to try and get to a place where we have a healthcare system that is at its best, where it's needed the most to address health inequalities in Scotland, because of course health inequalities in Scotland are the worst in Western Europe. So there's a lot in there, and I apologise, that was a very long answer, but that's just some of the stuff that we've done over the years. And the work, the Deep End group, was really inspired by the work of Julian Tudor Hart. He was the kind of inspiration for setting up the Deep End, and he first coined the inverse care law, which describes the availability of good medical care at varying inversely with the need for it in the population served. So that's kind of our driving principle in everything that we do.
The Deep End has made a massive difference, and because there are now international Deep End groups across the world. So again, Scotland is leading in that way. I want to emphasize, go to a Deep End conference, because I was inspired when I went to one by the people speaking there, their experiences and their commitment to this type of medicine. Continuity of care is something I talk about all the time. Future podcast will be about continuity of care. We plug there, but really even more important in areas of health inequity as well. And getting to know and trusting your patients is such a powerful thing for patients. So again, I'm going to ask you another easy question, Carrie, which, right, you have a blank sheet of paper. What should we do to actually counteract health inequity? And what are the barriers that have meant that it's not happened?
I think, you know, we know that health inequalities in Scotland are persisting, and that we've not really seen as much progress over them as we need to, that they remain the worst in Western Europe, that the gap in healthy life expectancy between the least and most affluent is almost a quarter of a century. So all of that is a pretty strong driver for doing things differently. I guess there are two main pieces of research that feel really useful to mention. One is the Leave No One Behind report, which was published in January 2023, which looked at the state of Scotland's health inequalities and made some recommendations at quite a high level. So we know that, for example, health inequalities have got a number of different things that drive them, and that the biggies, the big hitters, are the social and economic factors, and also the environment within which we live, and also health behaviours. So all of those things largely sit outside healthcare, but we also know that healthcare is estimated to have a 20% impact on driving health inequalities. So the way that we design and deliver and fund and enable and support healthcare can either make things worse or make things better. So for me, I guess in recent years, I've become really, really interested in what is the role of healthcare inequalities? What can we do within healthcare to make sure that we play our part in improving health inequalities? And we know that within that, we know that there's this inverse care law, which is persisting because we did some research on that last year, looking at what's happened to address the inverse care law in Scotland over the last 20 years. Has it gone? And we know it hasn't gone. It still persists in that access to care is often most difficult for those who need it the most. We also know that within healthcare, globally, that primary care and general practice play a really, really key role in improving population health and addressing health equity. Absolutely. And that if you don't have flourishing primary care, it's really difficult to achieve that. So there's a big obvious next step for me, which is about resourcing and supporting general practice much more than we currently do, to be able to play the really key role that it can play. So we know that general practice receives around less than 7% of the overall NHS budget. There's a long-term aspiration to get that up to at least 11% of the NHS budget, and then think about how that budget can be allocated proportionate to need across the general practice workforce, so that we're targeting where that goes, and making sure that, you know, we've got high levels of workforces in the areas where the need is greatest, for example. But we also need to make sure that those workforces are trained and supported and enabled in a way that allows them to work that is flexible and inclusive and accessible. We know that training is not as good as it could be in terms of making people feel competent and confident in addressing inclusion health issues when they qualify. So as you said, Chris, there's something about improving that at an undergraduate level. There's improving that during training, and also improving ongoing kind of educational opportunities to make that feel like this is core NHS work. We need everyone to feel confident in doing this. It's not a special interest topic that people should have to be learning about once they qualify, because unless people feel confident, they're less likely to want to work in areas of higher socioeconomic deprivation, and that just drives the inverse care law. But we also need to see kind of bravery around the implementation gap. So there's no lack of really aspirational policy out there around addressing the inverse care law and health inequalities. But what we struggle to see is that policy being implemented in a long-term sustainable way. So often there are commitments to short-term pilots or tests of change, often which then show really positive outcomes.
Yeah,
but what we then need to see is that converted into core long-term sustainable funding, whether that's for community link workers and financial inclusion workers, or whether it's for some of the more recent projects that some of your listeners might be aware of, like the Inclusion Health Action Project in general practice, which at the moment is available to the most deprived area practices in GG&C. It's a little bit of additional funding that allows them to get involved in training, get involved in longer consultations for people who are serially missing from their service, get involved in more community engagement. And it just shows what can happen if general practice is resourced to do things differently. So there's lots of different layers, I think, that we need to address this at, but some of it, I think, is just all of us thinking how we can use the levers within our system, whether we're a training organisation or whether we're a union, whether we're a government, whether we're a profession, how can we all be working together to make sure that healthcare is at its best where it's needed the most, and really recognise and celebrate the role that general practice in particular can play in this area.
Absolutely. And I think we're working on showing the value of general practice, because I'm not sure that decision makers really appreciate what a good investment it would be to actually put more money into primary care. Having said that, there appears to be political consensus around we need to tackle health inequity and support primary care. So we need to look forward positively and try and influence this at every level in your own practice, you know, across your clusters, all of these types of things, and at a national level. So I think that's been a fantastic, Carrie. I've learned a lot, as usual, talking to you. I've thrown difficult questions at you, and thank you for all of that. Really, really appreciate that. Thank you, and look forward to working together on these issues going forward.
Thank you, Chris.
Well, thank you very much. I hope you've thought that was an interesting and insightful discussion there. We're always looking for feedback on the podcast. It's really to try and engage with as many people as possible. So if you have any questions or comments, please contact us at infoscotland@rcgp.org.uk. And remember to subscribe and like us. And if you have any ideas for any subjects that you'd like covered, then please let us know as well. Take care. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Generally Speaking, the RCGP Scotland podcast. Be sure to follow us on social media to stay up to date with all of the work and news from across the college.